chapter 10, verses 1 to 33. In Caesarea there was a man named Cornelius, a centurion of the Italian cohort, as it was called. He was a devout man who feared God with all his household. He gave alms generously to the people and prayed constantly to God. One afternoon, about 3 o'clock, he had a vision in which he clearly saw an angel of God coming in and saying to him, "Cornelius." He stared at him in terror and said, "What is it, Lord?" He answered, "Your prayers and your alms have ascended as a memorial before God. Now send men to Joppa for a certain Simon who is called Peter. He is lodging with Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the seaside." When the angel who spoke to him had left, he called two of his slaves and a devout soldier from the ranks of those who served him. And after telling them everything, he sent them to Joppa. About noon the next day, as they were on their journey and approaching to the city, Peter went up onto the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while it was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw the heaven opened and something like a large sheet coming down, being lowered to the ground by its four corners. In it were all kinds of four-footed creatures and reptiles and birds of the air. Then he heard a voice saying, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is profane or unclean." The voice said to him again, a second time, "What God has made clean, you must not call profane." This happened 3 times, and the thing was suddenly taken up to heaven. Now, while Peter was greatly puzzled about what to make of the vision that he had seen, suddenly the men sent by Cornelius appeared. They were asking for Simon's house and were standing by the gate. They called out to ask whether Simon, who was called Peter, was staying there. While Peter was still thinking about the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Look, 3 men are searching for you. Now get up, go down, and go with them without hesitation, for I have sent them." So Peter went down to the men and said, "I am the one you are looking for. What is the reason for your coming?" They answered, "Cornelius, a centurion, an upright and God-fearing man, who is well spoken of by the whole Jewish nation, was directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and to hear what you have to say." So Peter invited.
And again, this is not a series, this is not a program, this is not, once we've done all these, we can now move on to something more, but it continues to be an unfolding, evolving sense of how do we be disciples of the one who has called us by name and said, "Come and follow me." And every day, we learn a little bit more, or something is changed in our understanding, or we grow in our understanding. We find that being a disciple does not mean you have to have it all together. Just, has anybody got it all together? Has everybody got all the answers? No? He does not know the questions. How true. Yes, I know all the answers if everybody asks me the right questions. Being a disciple is not having to have everything figured out. In fact, you will very likely discover that as a disciple of Jesus, you will not have everything figured out. You will not know all the answers. You will not know how God works. You will not know the answers to every theological question. You may know all the books of the Bible, but you might not know their order. You might not know their history, and you might not know their story. And you certainly might not know how God's grace will always work. God's grace is one of those mysterious forces and energies that continues to expand and contract and to move at a rate that is beyond our calculation and beyond our imagination. And what we find happening is that God invites us into that place where just for a moment, our understanding changes because we see God moving in mysterious ways and we go, ah. You don't have to have everything figured out. And therefore, if you get things wrong, which we are all want to do, if you get things wrong, it doesn't mean you get kicked off the team. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you failed the course in discipleship. It doesn't mean that Jesus doesn't want you, and it certainly doesn't mean that God doesn't love you anymore or that God has decided that you're a waste of space. Just because you have learned something or because you have done something or thought something incorrectly doesn't mean that you've got it all wrong and that you should just throw your hands up and say, oh, it's all too hard. I can't get this. Instead, every day and perhaps every moment becomes an opportunity or might be an opportunity to learn something of God's grace. Every night could be the place where God sows the seed of new insight that we hadn't conceived or thought of before. And so instead of being governed by fear, we can be led by hope. We can be attracted by the way that God is leading us because there's always a possibility God might do something we hadn't imagined. And if there's always a possibility that God could do something we hadn't imagined, it's quite possible that if we kept our eyes open, we might see more of where God is doing something we hadn't imagined possible. This reading that we've heard today is not included in the lectionary at all over the 3 years of the lectionary. We get the tail end of it, but only in one particular section and only once. So it's a story that's not often heard. This wonderful story of Peter being up on his rooftop praying, fasting, and then he sees this wonderful vision of this sheet being lowered before him with all these animals that are on it. And these animals are of all sorts. And as Peter says, there's some clean animals there, but there's some not so clean animals. There's reptiles and there's clawfoot and there's cows and sheep and snakes and crocodiles. And a voice comes and says, get up, kill, and eat. Now, the idea of just killing anything and then eating it frightens me. But for Peter, it's actually not just, oh, that just sounds really unpleasant, Lord, I'd rather not. This actually goes against the grain of the foundation of his faith. This is not just, oh, this is a bit difficult, should I, shouldn't I? That is categorically, without mistake, 100% against what we do as part of our faith. To do that would go against what God has been telling us for centuries not to do. Now think of those things that you hold most dear that you think we do this. This is always because this is what God has told us to do. And then think that someone then comes and gives you a message that suggests that you should stop doing that. How do you go with that? My guess is not very well. If we go to Leviticus 11, which is where we get a really good insight into what can and can't happen, we have this is part of the law that Israel is receiving when they're out in the wilderness and they are being shaped and crafted as God's people. And they're out in the wilderness, and God says, right, now, if you're going to be my people, this is what you need to do, and this is how you need to do it, and this is when you need to do it, and where you need to do it, and why you need to do it. Follow these instructions. And Leviticus 11 gives all these instructions about what are to be done with animals. And if they eat the wrong animal, if they consume the meat or the blood of different animals, they're in a whole world of trouble. They become unclean. And to be unclean is to find yourself at odds with the community. By these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of any of them shall be unclean until the evening, and whoever carries any part of the carcass of any of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until the evening. Every animal that has divided hoofs but is not cleft-footed or does not chew the cud is unclean for you. Everyone who touches one of them shall be unclean. All that walk on their paws among the animals that walk on all fours are unclean for you. Whoever touches the carcass of any of them shall be unclean until the evening. If you do this, you are unclean, and you must be treated as unclean. This is a theological reality that Peter has to live with, and here he is being told, it's all right, get up, kill, eat, it's fine. Those centuries of tradition don't matter anymore. Not just the things that your parents gave you, but that came from your ancestors. It's okay, don't worry about them. That'd be a shock to the system, wouldn't it? I wonder how we would go with that reality. And we find that Peter's understanding of the scope of God's inclusion radically changes. And as we hear in verse 34, I truly understand that God shows no partiality. Now here's the thing, Peter wasn't expecting to find this out. Peter wasn't diligently studying, thinking, I want to learn something new. Now for those of us who like to learn new things about whatever it might be, we like new discoveries. Oh, that's an interesting fact. I'll go and find out a bit more about that. Oh, that's something new. I don't mind doing that. This is not simply the discovery of something new because you're curious. Peter's now discovering all those years, all these generations, God is now saying, we're going to change the rules. We are now going to change the game. That would take a lot to get your head around. But being a disciple of Jesus means that our understanding is going to grow and be reshaped and be reimagined. And sometimes we tether ourselves too much to the rules that we think are so important and so intrinsic to what it means to be a Christian that we actually lock ourselves up into a stupor. So for instance, who remembers the days when you couldn't touch the communion table and move it 2 feet to the left or the right, or you'd get yourself in trouble? Or the days when women were not allowed to speak in a service, or preach, or lead? Or the days when to be participating in communion, you actually had to be a baptized believer of Churches of Christ. Remember Churches of Christ, by the way, it should be recognized. That great ecumenical movement that said everybody whom the Lord loves is welcome around this table and says this shall not divide us actually came up with a way to find a way to divide us by having that wonderful group of people called Christians in Fellowship. A great blight upon our movement. Christians in Fellowship were those who came from other faith traditions, other denominations, but weren't baptized. And we didn't know what to do with them because we were baptized by immersion was important. Sorry, don't get me started. But we concoct these rules. We concoct these rules and say, these are of God. We are trying to be faithful to God. And I have no doubt that there were some wise, intelligent, good-hearted people who came up with the idea of Christians in Fellowship and said, we've got to do this because it actually, if they're not baptized, that's really important. So how do we balance these faith traditions that are so important? And guess what? As a people, we grow in understanding. But we have to keep growing in understanding, because I dare say that God's going to keep pricking apart the edges of our theology and our thinking and our practices and say, look what I'm doing over here. Look at whom I'm inviting now. Look at what I'm doing in this area. Look at what I'm doing with this group of people. And if you keep having this particular practice, if you stay within this shape, you won't be able to enter into what I'm doing here. And I think that's the greatest tragedy. It's not just, oh, we get to learn something. It's that we actually will not participate in the unfolding of God's kingdom on earth. We're actually saying, I don't want any part of that, God. That sounds really good, but we've got our traditions and we're going to stay with them. And before you all leave today and say, Anthony said we don't have to worry about any traditions anymore, we can forgive it all, we've got to just let them all go. No, that's not what I'm saying at all. There's a particular tradition that Peter has been... He didn't say, forget your Jewishness completely. God didn't say, look, it doesn't matter at all about what you've believed, anything. It's just this one thing. And maybe there's one thing in which we need to grow in understanding and change the reality of what we think. Because what God has made clean, you must not call profane. So that may be an important lesson for us. We talk about sacred and secular. This is sacred and this is secular, and there's a clear divide. But what makes it sacred and what makes it secular? How do we distinguish that reality? Is it as clear cut as you think it is? Is it clear cut because you say it is, or is it clear cut because you understand the story? What's sacred and what's secular? What's profane and what's clean? Are you 100% convinced that what you think is secular is not sacred? Or is it possible that what we think is unclean or is profane actually is of God and has just been waiting for a chance to see the light of day? And this is where we can learn, and it's not easy, by the way. It's not easy to find out that something that you've believed in may not necessarily be of God's kingdom. But if we remember that being a disciple means we grow in our understanding. We grow in our understanding of what we believe. Because it's not just growing in our understanding. It's not just, oh, I've learned something new about the Bible today. That was interesting. That was good. That was nice. Like I get excited when I notice a word that changes everything. Like the story of Zacchaeus, where we've constantly said Zacchaeus changed and repented, where actually he has been doing this all this time. He has been giving money to the poor. He has repaid people. But because people have translated the Greek poorly, we've translated in, oh, he's had a change of heart. But the Greek says, no. Zacchaeus has always been doing this. Zacchaeus has always been generous. It's actually the people outside his door that haven't been generous. And I get excited. I think that's a fantastic illustration. I think that's wonderful. I can do something with that. That really opens up how I see God moving. But if it was something that was intrinsic to who I was, I think I would find that very difficult. And so it's sometimes about how God works and God's movement of grace for others. And that may be a real block for you, might be a real obstacle when you discover that God's grace for someone else, and that someone else is not like you, not like us. They don't dress like us, they don't talk like us, they don't act like us, they don't have the same traditions, they don't have the same belief, and yet God's grace goes to them. Is that making sense? So how do we discern, and this is the fun part of the sermon, if it hasn't been fun already. How do we discern these sorts of things is the curious thing. How do we discern when something new is unfolding and it's of God? So that's the trick, isn't it? Because sometimes somebody might come and say, this is really important. You think, oh, I should believe them because they're a person in authority. You might go home today and say, well, Anthony said it, therefore I should believe it. Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Please don't believe everything that comes out of my mouth. Sometimes it's just me on a soapbox or a little lost along the way. Or it's a little like this. It's a picture of an Isaac brown chicken, a wild boar, and a hippopotamus. If I didn't have your attention before, I certainly have it now. What do these things have in common, you may ask? Well, they're a lesson in how we can discern God's instruction and direction. I had a dream the other night. Not a trance and not a vision. I had a dream. Peter had a trance. Cornelius had a vision. How comfortable are we with God's messages coming through dreams? Do we pay much attention to those sorts of things? Yes? No? Well, I had a dream the other night. Gird up your loins. I'm going to tell you what it is. In my dream, I went out and three chickens lay dead in our backyard next to conveniently dug holes. And I thought, that's a bit of a shock. That's three out of four gone. What am I supposed to do with that? Maybe they've been hit by a flu. But without a moment's hesitation, a wall that doesn't actually exist in our backyard caved. And out of where this hole was, where this solid wall was, a wild boar, a dead wild boar, fell out. And I thought, where did that come from? I didn't bury that. I was a bit worried about what Bronwyn might thought I had been doing during the day. Where did a wild boar come from? What's the wild boar doing? What am I supposed to do with a wild boar? Oh, that's right. And I had this sense of, I must have buried that last week. Because that's what you do, is you bury wild boars in your backyard. And I started to think, well, I hope that the wild boar hasn't started to decay too much. Hope the flies and the maggots aren't getting to it. Fortunately, no. I sort of went a bit close and it seemed, oh, okay, that seems a bit odd. It seems a bit fresh. I moved into another area of our backyard that actually isn't our backyard but was there. And I kid you not, a hippopotamus died right in front of me. I have no idea what the hippopotamus was doing in my backyard. My next thought, how do I bury a hippopotamus? Now, you're asking, what's this? That's my point. I have no idea if this is a dream of God. I'm fairly sure it's not. I'm just trying to think what the correlation is between chickens, a wild boar, and a hippopotamus are. Because my next thought was, we've got to bury the hippopotamus in the backyard. And so I was going to call the boys and we're going to start digging. Fortunately, I didn't wake either one of them up to tell them that this was going to be our day's work. And so as I started to think about this, how are we going to bury this hippopotamus, I said to Bronwyn, we should call the Adelaide Zoo. They'll know what to do. They could come and get rid of all our dead animals for us because we can't bury a hippopotamus in the backyard. Now, I could wake up the next morning and say, well, God's got a message in there for me. I didn't. And if God does have a message in there about three dead chickens, a wild boar and a wild hippopotamus lying dead in my backyard, if any one of you is right now as a prophet and has a message of God for me, let me know. Because I'm really curious to know what God might want to reveal to me about dead animals in my backyard. I'm still waiting. I tell that story as a bit of a joke, but also as a, how do we discern when God's speaking with us? Because if I got up the next morning and said, right, Bron, we've got to kill three chickens and we're going to go wild boar hunting, I think I would have got a strange look. Or if I could extrapolate from that, and perhaps I've been reading Acts a little, but there's no snakes, for which I am so relieved. I hate snakes in dreams. Anyway, The nightmares give me nightmares. I've no idea what this means. But I'm pretty sure one thing that we can understand is just because you have a dream, it doesn't necessarily mean that God's speaking with you. But there is a sense that God is willing to work through our dreams and through our visions and through our trance-like states and communicate that which is most important. And perhaps the reason why is God can't get through it any other way. Because in this state in which we're in right now, we won't see it. We won't see what God wants to do when we're fully awake, because we're too switched on, or all our faculties are ready to go. It's when we're asleep, it's when we're fasting, it's when we're hungry, it's when we're having visions, it's when we are in moments of prayer that God will say, right, there's an open door. I can finally speak past all the layers of tradition and belief and understanding and go through. And I'll go through and I'll speak to them, not just so that you feel better about yourself and not just so that you'll say, well, that was lovely, God, I feel so close to you. But sometimes it will be because there is a message that needs to be shared with somebody else. And you need to be awake to what God might be saying to you, even when you're asleep. So maybe the title of the sermon needs to be Discipleship is Like Growing in Understanding as Well as Being Awake When We Are Asleep. Because God wants to do something with this world, and God has a message to communicate to this world about the unfolding nature of His grace that continues to expand at a rapid rate. And it's going to come down to people who have the capacity to share that message, whose understanding of good news continues to expand. If we believe what we believed when we were 5 years old, we would be a little less fortunate. We must grow and become the fully mature, fully equipped Christians that God and Jesus are calling us to be, so that the message we have to share can be given. And so if we're not growing in our understanding, whether it be through careful study or through trance-like visions, I wonder how God's going to communicate. Because that's really the purpose of you and I being here, is to communicate hope and love and peace and grace and compassion and justice and mercy and kindness to the world and the people who need to receive it, who may simply be looking for one word to give them the courage to say, yeah, what you're doing is right. Yes, I've heard your prayers. Yes, God is with you.